From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Even the idea of a forced marriage can seem far removed to Americans, but it's happening here, say my guests today, in America, in corners of Muslim, Hindu, Jewish communities, and more, where young women typically face huge pressures, coercion, with little protection under the law. This hour, On Point, forced marriage in America. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Were you forced into a marriage by threats of violence, expulsion from a community, something else? Do you know someone who has faced this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City is Aliana Alfaro. Beginning last year, she and two of her classmates in the journalism master's program at New York University teamed up for an investigative project on forced marriage in the U.S. Starting last month, the results of their investigation were published as a four-part series of articles by Al Jazeera America. You can link to that series at our website, onpointradio.org. Aliana Alfaro in New York, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What got you interested or focused on this issue, Aliana?
Well, we had to team up as part of the NYU capstone for our graduate program to do an investigation on a topic. And I teamed up with Sarah Fournier and Mary Zarikos. They ended up doing the series with me. And I remember Sarah had been saying that her grandmother in France had kind of been in an arranged marriage and how it's kind of a slippery slope. And she had actually done a previous project, just a short profile piece, on a woman who was forced into marriage, Vidya Suri. And I remember Vidya saying that the women hide very carefully. So when we wanted to do an investigation, we thought, well, is there a way to find out how many there are, how many are hiding? So that's what kind of made it happen.
I mean, we know we live in a multicultural country, but I can imagine a lot of people will look around and say, come on, forced marriage in this country, how would you do that? That's too difficult. How widespread could that be? Are we talking just a few, you know, really oddball cases here? Or have you found evidence of more than that, Aliana?
Well, I think that you have to remember that America is made up of so many different cultures and backgrounds. And there's a lot of different cultural practices that come over when people come to this community or when they have a separate community within the United States. So we actually, in our article, we cite a survey from the AHA Foundation, I believe, and they suspected that 3,000 cases of forced marriage were confirmed between 2009 and 2011 in the United States. So you definitely see that it happens here. And 3,000 might not seem like a large number when dealing with the millions of people in the United States. But again, you have to remember that there's no law protecting these victims. So how do you really quantify it when these people are getting, when it's not just not getting reported?
I want to look at the law, look at the leverage. What communities are they suggesting? If we have that number of forced marriages going on, what communities, in what communities are those most prominent, predominant, or common?
Well, according to John Jay, which just did a survey of forced marriages in the United States.
You're talking John Jay,
College of Criminal Justice. Mm-hmm. Yep. They identified communities that they called MENASA, which is Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia. And then we also came across in ultra-Orthodox communities forced marriages as well in our own investigation. I remember speaking to someone at Footsteps, which is an organization that helps people who want to leave the Orthodox community transition.
You're talking Orthodox Jewish or even ultra-Orthodox if it's forced marriage.
Yes, especially ultra-Orthodox. We talked to two different women, Freddie Reese and Deborah Feldman, from the ultra-Orthodox, from various Jewish communities in New York City, who'd faced this.
So North Africa, Middle East suggests Muslim, South Asian suggests Hindu. Is that what you found in this country, in within subcultures or corners of those cultures?
Yeah, I would say so. We spoke to Vidya Suri, who was from India. And then also we had gotten some court documents about the case of Amina Ajmal, who was also from a South Asian country. So you definitely see it in those. And then Sauti Yetu is an organization in the Bronx which focuses on women from African countries, North African countries, who deal with this kind of forced marriage as well.
What do you mean when you say forced marriage exactly? How is it related to or different from or entirely distinct from arranged marriage?
Well, I think the main distinction between forced and arranged marriage is that when it's arranged, you still have the option to say no. Unless, of course, you just don't think that you're possibly given the option. And then what's the difference between forced, really? But forced is a lot of times coercion. It's a lot of fear with these women that I don't think typically in arranged marriages you see that. And so I think that the main difference is just the level of fear and coercion.
What kind of coercion did you find evidence of? What kind of leverage to force these marriages? Are we talking social pressure? If so, what kind? Are we talking gun to the head, really?
Well, a lot of times it's just getting totally isolated from your community. So everybody that you've ever known will cease to recognize you as existing anymore. And for a lot of people, that's really scary to just think that, oh, I just should just get married because if not, I'm not going to have any family. I'm not going to have any friends. Or a lot of times it's the fear of getting shipped back to a country in one of these countries, like India. Vidya was sent back to India to get married and not knowing anybody there, not knowing the language. So a lot of times it's just fear of one of those things happening.
You describe circumstances in which young women in America are sent back to the old country. Maybe it's India or elsewhere, Pakistan, you name it. And then not allowed to return to the United States until they agree to accept the marriage that's been arranged for them there. Do you call that forced?
I would definitely say that that's forced, because if a woman is forced to go to a country and enter a marriage, her family might call it arranged, but in reality, there's no choice there. She doesn't want to be in that country. And if she ever wants to come home, she just has to accept her fate and marry this man that she doesn't know.
Let's go to our listeners. They're paying close attention here. Green Bay, Wisconsin, Dante's calling. Dante, thanks for calling. What do you see?
I live in Green Bay. My girlfriend is Hmong.
Hmong, that's from Laos originally. Many came over after the Vietnam War.
Yes, and she has a few cousins, friends, and family. They tend to get married, I'd say, around 16, 18, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a $5,000 dowry.
Yes.
In order to marry a daughter. And it's pretty common in Green Bay.
But is it forced marriage, Dante, or is it this is just their cultural way? That's what everybody accepts as how they'll do it.
I would say there's a lot of pressure on the two to go through with the marriage. I guess they could choose not to do it, but that'd be crash the process.
Dante, I appreciate your call. Forced marriage, something like it among the Hmong in Wisconsin. I don't know, Aliana, do we have to be careful here about imposing our cultural understanding of how marriage, you know, our sort of traditional image of romantic marriage? Not every culture shares that. Should we be more alert to exploitation, coercion in our midst? Are we too lenient about it because we say, well, it's multicultural?
Well, I think that you have to be careful when you're thinking about this as a cultural thing. You have to remember 16, that's still a very young girl. So even if she thinks that she might be okay with it, if she's raised her whole life to not know the different option, is it really a cultural thing? Or you have to think about it, like, is that fair to that girl? So I think you do have to have some cultural sensitivity and understand that romantic marriage isn't necessarily for everyone. But you have to really think, is this girl who's getting married, is this what's going to make her happy? Does she want to do this? Or would she rather go seek out that romantic idea of love? And if so, that should be her choice, not her parents' choice.
Zeke in Boston. Zeke, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I did notice at your opening, you really focused on cultures that from far-flung corners of the world. I went to college in Kentucky, and I can say that I'm not talking about Muslim or Orthodox Jew. I'm talking about Christian, fundamentalist Christian cultures in Appalachia that, have forced young women into arranged marriages as early as 16. And these are women that I went to college with.
So you're not talking shotgun wedding in a pregnancy situation, but actually forced and arranged.
Yeah, forced and arranged marriages. in Appalachian Kentucky.
Interesting. And, Zeke, I appreciate your call. Our time is short before the break. I mean, I'm looking at the groups that Aliana and her team have looked at, but I have no doubt, I suppose it could be wider than that, Aliana, wider than the groups that you focused on.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely imagine that this goes on in many more cultures than we would realize, because, I mean, if you just don't, you just can't necessarily always see it. And I think that that's one of the main things that we really tried to drive home with our series, is that this is a very hidden issue, and we need, there needs to be laws to persecute it, because if not, it's not going to change, and this is going to continue happening in any culture.
Is there really no law against, I mean, a young woman can be forced to marriage, period, that's it?
I mean, a lot of times when this gets prosecuted, it goes into different domestic, it goes into maybe domestic violence, because a lot of times there's conflict, because if they're not happy together, that's going to result, like, end up in conflict. Or a lot of times it's just the women are too scared to seek help because there is no law in the books. So there's no federal law protecting victims of this. And I spoke to two detectives from Arizona who kind of made it their mission to do this, and that's what they're really gunning for, these laws.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about forced marriage in America. Al Jazeera America has published a big expose by students who have tracked it down. One of them is with us today. Aliana Alfaro joins us from New York. You can link to the whole series published in Al Jazeera America at our website, onpointradio.org. Aliana Alfaro joins us from New York. Two of the women that she has written about and talked with join us now. With me here in the studio is Vidya Sri. She was raised in Queens, in New York. At 18, she was sent to India by her family to live with relatives. Her family did not allow her to return to the U.S. unless she agreed to marry a man she did not know. After 4 years, she gave in. After 18 years of marriage, she divorced her husband, founded a group called Ganga Shakti, a support and resource organization for women in forced marriages. Vidya Sri, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
And with us from New York is Frady Reese, raised in an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community in Brooklyn. She was married at 19 to a man who turned out to be violent. 10 years later, she left the marriage, was cut off by most of her family, before eventually obtaining a divorce. She's now founder and executive director of the organization Unchained at Last. It's a group dedicated to helping women avoid and leave forced marriages and rebuild their lives. Frady Reese in New York, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, for doing this important story.
Vidya Sri, this can sound like something very strange and marginal and rare. Is it fair to see it that way in this country today, Vidya?
Absolutely not. It is more common than we realize. My case is much more common than we give credit to.
Was your case, I don't know, where's the line between arranged marriage and forced marriage? I spent time living in India. I knew many people who had arranged marriages. It was what they expected. It's what they accepted, by and large. And yes, their sense of love and how it developed was different than a traditional American sense, but it worked for them. Are you saying you're opposed to that whole way of mating, or is it just when the coercion comes in?
Correct. So I'm not opposed to that whole way of mating, as you put it. Arranged marriage is a fairly mainstream way of having two families introduced two people to each other for the purpose of marriage. There's typically no violence. There's typically no coercion or fraud. It's practiced by many different kinds of communities all over the world, including here in the United States. Where this becomes something different, specifically forced marriage, is when the family dismisses the need for consent and when the family uses shaming and violence to reinforce the shaming. The family denies the individual the right of refusal. That's when this becomes something different. And quite specifically, I define forced marriage as one where either force, fraud, or coercion is used to cause the marriage.
Force, fraud, or confusion.
Or coercion.
Coercion, excuse me. Okay. Shaming, is that out of bounds? You know, all kinds of emotions come into play here. If someone's shamed into a marriage, will you call that, but not violently coerced, do you call that forced marriage? And what does it mean, shamed? So we chose this person, so you really must?
again, it depends on whether there's force, fraud, or coercion. Shaming encompasses a very broad range of things, everything from psychological and emotional pressure and intimidation to physical pressure and intimidation, physical violence. It really is very, very broad. So,
Freddie Reese, in New York, were you really forced into marriage? Does that term really apply in your case in, I guess, an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community there?
Yeah, that's a good question. In our community, or my former community, nobody uses the word arranged or forced. And I always say it wasn't until after I was divorced that it occurred to me that my marriage had been arranged. That was just the way marriage worked. The way I look at it is that arranged and forced marriages are all along a spectrum. And it's very hard to differentiate and say, oh, this was a forced marriage versus this was arranged marriage. Because, anytime there's any pressure or coercion or force, obviously the idea of choice is, in an arranged marriage, the parties are supposed to have choice. But if there's any pressure at all, which you typically see in an arranged marriage, then you wonder, okay, is this an arranged marriage? Is this a forced marriage? So, for example, in my situation, I did technically get the choice to say no to the marriage. I did get the option to meet him beforehand and to say, no, I don't want to get married. But, in that community, typically you're very young and inexperienced when you get to meet somebody. You don't really get to date this person for very long. And on these dates, you're never allowed to be alone together. You always have to be in a public place. You're not allowed to have any physical contact. And you only have a limited number of these so-called dates before you need to tell the matchmaker whether you want to spend the rest of your life with this person who's basically a stranger to you. And you know that if you say no to more than a couple of matches, the matchmakers will stop sending matches your way. That's incredible pressure to put on a 17 or 18-year-old girl to decide, do you want to get married to this guy?
This gets very nuanced, Freddie. I mean, how do we address this? I mean, Aliana has people saying, let's get the law involved here. But these are very nuanced mm-hmm. cultural issues in a way you're describing right there. This is right down in very fine grain elements of tradition. How do you bring the big machinery of the law in there without trampling over perhaps important cultural habits?
That is very difficult to do. And there's also always the concern that with laws that, first of all, girls will be less likely to come forward to report that parents are forcing or pressuring them into marriage because they'll be concerned about their parents being punished. There's also concern that families would be more likely to take their children overseas and force them into marriage there, where they're less likely to be able to call the police or get help. Passing a law is not necessarily the right answer. And, this is something that we need to look at and we need to discuss and we need to come up with some way to help girls and women who are being forced to pressure into marriage and the girls and women who are already in those marriages and want to leave. But I don't know that necessarily we should bring out the big guns of the big laws.
So to be multicultural but with some minimal protections at the same time, maybe more than minimal, this is interesting terrain. We've got listeners really thinking about this. Hamden, Connecticut, John is calling. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm privileged to teach anthropology in a secondary school to adolescents. And so when I hear this topic, I immediately go to the anthropological perspective. And one of the things I would like to remind everyone is that culture is a coercive force in all cultures. And so one of the examples used was the 16-year-old girl who sort of limited in her choices and forced, which is the language being used, into a marriage. I would stipulate that in our culture here in New England, depending on socioeconomic levels, we coerce 16-year-old girls into going to college. We say this is the script. This is your life script. You're going to go to college. You're going to get a job. You're going to get married. You're going to have children. You're going to meet the man of your dreams. We're talking about women, or the woman of your dreams. You're going to fall in love, and you're going to get married. That's a life script. And, I would just like to remind us that we force children to conform to these scripts. We force them to go to college. We force them into a dating world that we have sexual experiences and, you should probably have, now sort of the society has changed to, have more sex than it used to be instead of waiting for your marriage night, that sort of thing. Even in fashion, we coerce people into certain behavior patterns. So I'd like just to remind people of that. So when we talk about shaming, if a child says, I don't want to go to college, they're going to be shamed by their family for that if it's a family that believes that that's culturally acceptable. The problem I think we run into in our society with this topic of forced or arranged marriage is that we live in a pluralistic society. There's a lot of different types of people. And so now you have that 16-year-old girl who sees other ways of being and thinks, well, I want that. I see it on television. I see it in my friends' lives, and that's what I want. And so, yeah, that creates a problem, but we're beating up on this idea by calling it forced marriage. Arranged marriage is the norm historically. It's the norm in other cultures. It rubs up against our modern pluralistic Western culture, and that's the only point I'd like to
make. John, I appreciate that very much. Vidya, what do you make of our anthropologists' take here? All culture is coercive, and we're pluralistic, so who's to say what's right and wrong?
Well, I think we really have to look at the outcomes that this produces. So if we're going to say culture is coercive, which I don't agree with, and if one of the outcomes is making a child go to college or higher education, I think we really need to pause for a moment and think about, is that a violent outcome? Is that an outcome detrimental to society? Is that an outcome with a major societal cost? I don't believe it is. Whereas with forced marriage, there are innumerable costs to society.
Such as? I can see the cost to the individuals. The cost to society is?
Well, you do have people breaking the law in many instances. You have different kinds of...
Domestic violence, you
not
mean?
Not only domestic violence, but you have different kinds of immigration fraud. You have trafficking happening in different instances. You have child and early marriage happening, where you have residents and citizens of the United States, children, who are of the age of 15 or 16, who are being forcibly married without any choice. So these are acts of, you know, they're breaking the law. So there are different consequences here that really we need to really slow down and think about.
Aliana Alfaro, did you find instances of people being pushed into marriage at very early ages? I think I was reading even courts cooperating in this in the United States with judges who don't want to be seen as culturally insensitive, Aliana.
Well, that's when I spoke to the two detectives in Arizona, Jeffrey Balson and Chris Bowie, they have really kind of made it their mission to fight this. And they were telling me of cases where women were sent back and they had to do missions to get them out because they were sent very young. And I remember Detective Bowie telling me, well, a crime's a crime. And regardless of whether this is cultural or not, you're in the United States and you chose to be here, so you shouldn't commit a crime against your child, send them to another country against their will, because it's detrimental to the child in the way that Vidya said. So I think it is seen here. We just don't really know what to do with it.
What do you think of our caller's observation that all culture is coercive in some sense? And, you know, as a young woman yourself, recently in college, when he's comparing what you're calling forced marriage to American young women being expected to go to college. He's drawing a parallel there. What do you think of that, Aliana?
Well, I mean, I can sense that there are definitely cultural norms in each culture that we generally follow. But I think the difference is that I remember one case that I researched where a girl had refused to go into an arranged marriage. This was a young woman from Arizona named Noor Al-Maleki, and her father had killed her because she didn't want to enter this marriage and she wanted to live her life a different way. So I think the main difference there is if I had told my parents, I don't want to go to college, there would be no threat on my life. My family's honor in me not going to college isn't worth more in that respect than the decision that I made to live my life as I choose.
I mean, at murder, there's an extreme example, but point taken. Lena's calling from Wausau, Wisconsin. Lena, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I am part of this, forced marriage and stuff. I was 15 when I got forced married. It's really complicated. I definitely believe what you guys are saying, that, you know, coming to the United States, we shouldn't do that. You know, like it's illegal to do that. But still, as for cultural, you know, they're so into their beliefs and they're so traditional that no matter what, they still do it.
Lena, you say you were forced into marriage at age 15. How were you forced into marriage?
My father, he got forced married too. And it's just, we got forced married because we were young. You know, it's just a dating thing. And when they're really traditional, they think really wrong. You know, they might think like, oh, what if you guys, you know, what if you get pregnant? You know, what if this happens, you know? And if he was just to stay and, you know, watch movies or spend time at my house, then parents think wrong, especially the father.
How old was your husband when you were 15 and forced into marriage?
Same age.
15. And are you part of some particular ethnic group, Lena, there in Wausau?
Yes, I am.
What is that?
For Hmong people.
Hmong. So also Laotian descended. How old are you now, Lena?
I am 19.
And how do you, are you still in the marriage?
Yes, I am.
And how do you feel about it now? Do you think your family was right or wrong to push you into this?
To admit, my father was wrong. I know he regrets it because he always tells me he doesn't want my life to end up like his. But right now, being married young, it's really complicated. It's really challenging. Me trying to go to college and having a spouse at my side, it's hard because, you know, going for different majors, and we always have to be together, and it's really complicated.
Do you think, Lena, that you should have been able to call the police to stop this? Can you picture what that would have been like?
I mean, it would have helped me a lot, but it would have made me look bad, especially to my ethnic. I mean, depending how it goes, because at the same time, I don't want my father to be, you know, be in jail or be at fault for this. It's complicated.
Lena, I so appreciate your call. I wish you very good luck there. I hope it works out well for you on whatever path you end up on. But thank you for calling. Freddie, what do you hear when you hear that call from Lena in Wisconsin? That you hear the pressure there. She doesn't want to put her father in jail. What should society be doing here?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a heartbreaking story, and that's the kind of thing that I deal with a lot through my organization, Unchained at Last. You know, it's really hard to know what to do. And one of the things that we have to be aware of is you asking before about, you know, cultural sensitivity. And you think that there's that fine line between being culturally sensitive and saying, oh, this is the way these people live. We have to respect that. And also, you know, saying, well, there's a certain extent here where should a 15-year-old girl be allowed to get married in the United States? You know, it's our minimum marriage age laws really need to be examined.
I mean, are there minimum marriage age laws in most states, Freddie?
Yeah, so in most states in the U.S., 18 is the minimum marriage age, but with judicial consent, and I hate the word consent there because we all know parental consent, which can mean parental force, and judicial consent, that age gets lowered in most states to zero. So if you have a judge sign off on it, you can marry off your toddler in most states in the U.S. if you wanted to.
And are judges widely ready to sign off on those young marriages?
You know, I don't know of any specific cases where a judge signed off on a toddler getting married. Somebody signed off on that caller's marriage, and I don't know who that was. I'd like to, you know more about that. But I do know that what I have seen is judges really bending over backwards to appear culturally sensitive, and I have seen judges who have come out with decisions that make me question whether they would make the right choice if a parent came and said, I want to marry off my child.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about forced marriage in America. Al Jazeera America has published a big expose by students who have tracked it down. Aliana Alfaro, one of that team, is with us today from New York City. You can link to their investigative series at our website, onpointradio.org. Two of the women that she talked with about their experiences in the bigger picture are with us as well. Vidya Sri joins me in the studio, raised in Queens, forced into marriage, out of it now, and trying to help others. Her group is Ganga Shakti. With us in New York, Freddie Reese, ultra-Orthodox Jewish community she was raised in Brooklyn. Forced, hard to say, not good, hard to get out of, shunned when she did, as if dead to her family. Her group is Unchained at Last. We get into some very interesting, nuanced territory here. We have all kinds of responses from our listeners, Vidya, Freddie, Aliana. Here's S. Kelly says, we can't pick and choose what aspects of someone's culture we decide to accept in our society. Then we'd be practicing forced socialization. So un-American, we can't have our cake and eat it too. But Steve writes, it may be cultural to force a marriage, but that doesn't make it right. Here's Adam, who says, I've seen women from South Asia basically held hostage by abusive husbands and their families. The husband's family hides the wife's passport. It's a rather simple way to do it there. But Yesudas writes, how do you distinguish between forced marriage and arranged marriage? In many parts of the world, arranged is the norm. Traditional, cultural, religious factors make the force in such marriages more nuanced than is easily perceived to the Western mind. We come back to that, Vidya. Don't muck around in this. You just don't understand it, Vidya, that argument.
Yeah, and, you know, we could consider that argument seriously if it wasn't for the fact that my NGO, Ganga Shakti, has received inquiries from Chinese American, Latin American, African American, Irish American, and South Asian American women who are seeking help to either leave a forced marriage that is abusive, or they're seeking support to remain in a forced marriage, much like Lena's story that we heard earlier. So this is not limited to any one ethnic group or religion. And I think we can very clearly remind our listeners that no religion advocates forced marriage. There is no religion that is allowing this under any religious mandate. And I think part of the problem that we face here, as my co-author, Darakshan Raja, has said to me many times, we need accountability, not blame. I've written a paper called Voices from the Frontline, Addressing Forced Marriage in the United States, where we surveyed 524 students, domestic violence professionals, and refugee service providers. We analyzed 52 case reviews of suspected and confirmed cases of forced marriage and produced interviews with 22 frontline responders, scholars, activists, and survivors of FM. And we have some very tangible data, some very tangible numbers that are teaching us some very specific things on this issue.
Here's a tweet from SD who says, I get MENASA, the term, the acronym you used, Eliana, Middle Eastern, North African, South Asian. But our listener writes, what about FLDS? That wing of Mormonism or other Christian cult communities. What did you find there, Aliana?
Well, we based our organization mainly in New York City, just because that's where we were, and that's where John Jay College of Criminal Justice was doing their survey. So MENASA is what they identified, and the people that they surveyed 100 MENASA community members, which is why I referenced that specifically. But like I said, I don't discount it happening in other cultures. We heard from Lena before with the Hmong. Obviously, Frady was from – there was a few Jewish communities that we identified as this being a problem. So I definitely do not discount it from FLDS, and I know that there have been some prosecutions in that and child marriages specifically in the FLDS community in the past. Mm-hmm. So we didn't particularly look into it, but I would not culturally discount it.
Let's go to Sarah in Nashville, Tennessee. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling, from Nashville. We've got many populations of Muslims here, large populations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the largest populations of Kurds outside of Kurdistan. I personally have been involved in several situations with some close friends here in the Kurdish community of girls who, yes, it was being forced. Forced means in the Middle Eastern countries and cultures that, like the anthropologist mentioned, it's a cultural norm, so we're enforcing it. The problem is the girls that grow up here are like third culture kids.
Mm-hmm.
They have both cultures mixed.
Yes.
And their voice is not heard, and they have no place to go. And two of my close friends have had to run away from their homes, and I'm friends with their homes also. Great homes, great people, but this is such a cultural norm. And the shame is so strong because their shame-oriented culture is not like ours. It's guilt-oriented. And I would also put in there, let's not approach this with a guilt-oriented total solution, though the law will be a guilt-oriented solution.
Do you think the law is needed here, Sarah? Is the law too crude an instrument, or is it needed to come in and give some protection?
I think it is needed, and they certainly need some safe houses. My girls, they had nowhere to go, and I actually have had them stay with me some. And I'm very close friends with their fathers and mothers and grandparents, and I love all of them. But there's just an implied, I will say this. They agreed to it in the beginning, but that's because they were over in the culture temporarily, going with the norm of that culture on a temporary trip with their family. When they got back here, they were almost like, what did I do? And so they wanted to change it, but hey, you can't. Because the engagement, you know, like Joseph and Mary, it's viewed as the commitment. And so the family would be hugely ashamed for you to break that off.
Sarah, we hear the intimacy of your familiarity with these situations. It's very interesting to get that texture right there with the large Kurdish community, as you say, in Nashville. We've got Mike calling from Sunapee, New Hampshire, with a question right on this point of the law in that kind of subtle family situation. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk of bringing the law in to these situations. There's also been, obviously, a broad gray area that's been discussed, much of which is probably inappropriate to involve the criminal justice system. My question really is, I haven't heard any discussion of an area of the law that exists that probably covers most, if not all, of the territory where it is appropriate to involve the criminal justice system, and that's the laws pertaining to human trafficking. And why hasn't that been discussed? And why can't the issue, the cases that are clearly represent legally prosecutable injustice, why can't they be prosecuted under human trafficking
laws? Mike, let us pick it up. Freddie Reese, what about it? Trafficking laws, human trafficking laws, and their potential application here.
Yeah, so I mean, so first of all, I mean, that's a good question because there is a very a strong link between these arranged and forced marriages and human trafficking. So at Unchained at Last, for example, we have many clients who are brought over from overseas as part of an arranged or forced marriage, and then they're treated basically as slaves when they get here, and they are you know, physically, emotionally, sexually abused and threatened. You know, if you try to go to the police, you're going to be deported. And often don't have a legal immigration status. And then we have the reverse, where we have U.S. citizens brought up here, and then at a certain age, their families send them overseas and force them into marriage, and their value to their new husband is their U.S. citizenship. So as soon as the marriage takes place, the husband will apply for a U.S. visa. So yeah, there is that strong link with human trafficking. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm not really sure which laws pertain to human trafficking. I mean, what we have is a situation where you have a 17-year-old girl, we go to the police and say, you know, her family's trying to force her into marriage. You know, it just becomes a mess because we don't have the laws in place in the U.S. And I don't know what specific human trafficking law we can then use in that situation, especially when there's a minor, it becomes a problem of often, you know, child services needs to be brought in as opposed to using domestic violence. Police often will try to use domestic violence laws. It just becomes this huge mess. If you look at the UK, they have a much better way of handling this, where they do have civil protection orders that they can put in place to protect girls who are being forced into marriage. They have a task force that they run that responds in situations like this. They have a hotline that they run. People can call in and ask for help. So there's just a much more comprehensive approach to this as opposed to in the U.S. where you can try to gerrymander some of the, you know, domestic violence or human trafficking laws, but it becomes very difficult.
Interesting to look at the U.K. where they've had proportionally larger populations of some of these cultures for a long time. Might be something to learn right there. Judy in Milwaukee. Judy, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Frandy, I'd like to address my question to you. Are you willing to identify what sect you belong to? Are you Lubavitch Hasidic, or are you Satmir, or are you one of the other Hasidic sects?
Well, I was from a sect. There was a large ultra-Orthodox community that's not Hasidic, and my family was a half from that community, the Litvish community, a way of life that started in Lithuania, and half from the small sect of Karlin Stellan, which is a small Hasidic sect that a lot of people have not heard of.
Right, because I lived in Kew Gardens Hills. I was a member of a very, very large Orthodox community for many, many years. And here in Milwaukee, I'm a member of the Lubavitcher Hasidic sect. And I'm 73 years old. And I have to tell you, in all my years, I have come across many an arranged marriage, which is very different. And I have seen that the parents of both a prospective bride and groom work very, very hard to match these two young people up, to see that they have a lot of things in common. Because a great deal is invested in an Orthodox Jewish marriage, as I'm sure you know, and it's in the interest of everyone to see that these marriages will work out and be happy. And usually, yes, it's true, they do date a few times. If they don't like each other, they move on. But certainly in my own community in Queens, which is in Kew Gardens Hills, I'm sure you're familiar with that community, and here in Milwaukee, there's a large Lubavitch community, I have never seen a forced marriage. Now, I know you're a member of Unchained, and that's a different story. That's the Aguna who cannot get a divorce, and that's a serious problem among the Orthodox Jews. But I have not encountered a forced marriage. There are always exceptions to the rule, but at least, and I can only speak for the Lubavitch community, where I lived in Brooklyn, I was familiar with them too. So I think we have to be very, very careful. You know, my own parents had an arranged marriage. Somebody was sent back to the old country to check out my father's family. And my parents were married for 60 years. They were very happy. But I'm just trying to say that this is a very, very nuanced thing. The Satmirs are very, very different than the Lubavitch. And I think that we can't sort of lump everybody all together.
Freddie, what do you think of Judy's long-term perspective on this?
No, I appreciate that. And I think that a lot of families do have their children's best interests in mind and do as much research as they can when they arrange these marriages. But I think that we have to step back and recognize that the young people who are involved in these are facing a lot of pressure when their parents have put so much work into a marriage. There's, I mean, to dismiss the fact that there's a lot of pressure on these very young, inexperienced people is unfair to those people who are going through it. And I will tell you also that in terms of actual force, and again, I don't really know how you differentiate between arranged and forced when there's that much pressure. But if you want to look at forced marriage, specifically where a girl is crying and saying, no, 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 I don't want to get married, and her family is literally dragging her down the aisle, that unfortunately does happen in the Orthodox Jewish community, and I have seen that time and again.
Is there just a difference in perspective here? Are you rejecting the kind of arranged marriage that Judy seems still to value?
I'm not rejecting arranged marriage. And, you know, nobody here is coming out and saying, you know, we're going to end the practice of arranged marriage. What I'm saying is that we need to recognize that sometimes there's pressure, coercion, and force in these marriages. We need a way to help girls and women who are being pressured, coerced, or forced into these marriages. We also have to recognize that a woman who faces limited or no choice when she enters a marriage typically faces the same if she wants to leave the marriage. So what I have seen time and again is that in these communities, divorce is considered very shameful, and there's a lot of pressure specifically on women to keep a marriage together at any cost, even if there's abuse or unhappiness, infidelity, whatever it is. So, you know, we can't dismiss that just because, you know, arranged marriage has been going on for a long time.
Judy, thanks for your call. Bruce in Framingham, Massachusetts. Bruce, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I come from a law enforcement perspective. For a number of years, I was a victim advocate of domestic violence in Texas. And basically, the point I want to make is that we already have laws on the books that will help out in this area. At least it did in Texas, but there is one barrier, and that is the barrier to pursuing law enforcement or the courts in this is the complaint of the young woman who feels like she's being forced, or indeed that some kind of crime has happened.
Why is that a barrier? If she's complaining, isn't that the point?
Well, the problem is she can complain, but then when it comes down to actually signing a complaint, that is a whole different ballgame. And as you probably have heard before, then dealing with domestic violence victims is very, very difficult in other states than Texas because the police officers get very frustrated trying to have the domestic victim actually sign a complaint and stick with it.
Which could lead to serious legal action for members of her own family. Bruce, you clearly know it well. Vidya, you're shaking your head. We've only got a couple of minutes here. We want to be sensitive culturally. We are a multicultural tapestry in this country, and yet you don't want to see young women's rights and autonomy abused. Where do we go?
Well, this is a humiliating issue, Tom. It's filled with embarrassment and shame. So survivors hide very carefully to not bring criticism and judgment upon themselves, their families, and their loved ones. There's considerable blame out there with this issue, the idea that they do this, or this is a problem from over there. There is more blame than accountability currently. So survivors, they don't want to speak out and get put in the center of a debate that very few people understand. The study that we did, Voices from the Frontline, it was a random sample. We didn't go looking for people. People attended the workshop or talk delivered by Ganga Shakti based on their own personal interest. And out of 524 respondents, close to 40% reported witnessing known cases of forced marriage. And out of that, students had a very dominant representation. 300 of the 524 were students, and 2% of them reported on actual suicide, that someone took their life to escape a forced marriage. So I think that is one of the things that tells us the level of pressure that these individuals feel to protect their families and protect themselves.
Wow, we're in a multicultural era with some big challenges to both be respectful of communities as a whole and traditions, but also of individuals within those. Aliena Alfaro, how do you come out of this as a young woman? How do you come out thinking about where we're headed? Are you optimistic that we'll figure the law out, or are we flying blind, Aliena?
Well, I think that awareness in any issue is the first step. So I'm just happy that this is getting talked about. So until more people know about it, I think then we can continue to make progress.
Well, kudos to you and your co-authors on the big Al Jazeera America series. Aliena Alfaro in New York, thank you very much for your work and for joining us, Aliena.
Thank you, Tom.
Freddie Reese with Unchained at Last and Vidya Shree with Ganga Shakti. Thanks to each of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.